People's Show, Final Four. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, Randeep Janda. Grinds my gears that the Red Hot Chili Peppers are going on a world tour next summer. Oh. Not coming to Vancouver.
Dude, I went and saw them when they were here for the Stadium Arcadium.
Yeah.
It was a great, great show. They have Mars Volta that no longer exists. They opened up the tour, and man, what a show it was. So I'm with you. I was very disappointed. I haven't been to a show. Man, I think the last time I was at a show was I saw the Black Keys.
Yeah. Okay. They put on a good show, too.
Yeah, they were pretty good. But that was the last time I've been to a show. That's some years ago now.
The last one I went to was like Action Bronson or something. Great, yeah. Great rapper, though, man. Like a lot of sports references, but the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I'm not a rock guy.
I didn't take you for an Action Bronson guy.
Action Bronson's is awesome. He's dope. And he actually puts on a really good show as well at the Commodore. So I hope he's coming back soon. But Red Hot Chili Peppers, not a rock guy. I'll go to that concert any day of the week.
Might be a boys trip to Seattle next summer.
My
people show on the road.
All right.
Pair that with the baseball game or something.
You know what? Yeah, you know what? I'm down. Let's work something out. See a show.
Yeah. Because they are going to Seattle. Just not making the trip north of the border to come to Vancouver, unfortunately. Red Hot Chili Peppers, great show. John Frusciante's back as well, the main guitarist. So the band back together. All right. Enough of that. Update. Alex Ovechkin, goal number 8 on the season.
Wow.
And he is just a few shy now of passing Dave Andrechuk for the most power play goals of all time. It's 271st today.
And he's 3 goals behind Brett Hull on that all-time scoring list as well. So he's chipping away at that list, folks. Also an update in Chicago. The Blackhawks are playing against the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's 2-0 Chicago right now. Mm-hmm. Toronto, not in a good way.
No.
Not in a good way right now.
No.
Chicago's first lead of the season. DeBrincat and Kirby Dach, the goal scorers over there. Bruins and Panthers are 1-1. And if you hadn't heard, yes, Joel Quenneville is coaching the Panthers today. Not a good look for the Panthers or the NHL, as we know, after Kyle Beach made his courageous thoughts public today on TSN. All right, it is the People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda continuing to talk about the NHL, but going to take some time now to dive in with our QB analyst. Joins us weekly. It is Mark Schofield. What's up, Mark?
What's going on, gentlemen? How are you guys doing tonight?
We are fantastic. Our text line and one of our loyal citizens of the People's Show, Silver and Black Canuck, is going to lambaste us if we don't get your thoughts on the season Derek Carr is having right now.
I mean, Carr's playing at an extremely high level. I mean, you don't complete, 92% of your passes in an NFL game if you aren't doing something right. And, that's what Carr did this last week against the Philadelphia Eagles. I've been very impressed, that, not just this past week, but really over the past year and a half or so, with how Carr has sort of grown to appreciate the downfield passing game. He's become much more aggressive in the downfield passing game. And you can see the trust that he's developing in his receivers, particularly Henry Ruggs. The past 2 weeks, he's really been comfortable. Just he sees Ruggs downfield, whether he's covered, whether he's double covered, whether he's got a step on the defender, and he's putting the ball up for him. And they've had some success with that in the downfield passing game. You know, there were a couple of plays in the big pass in the downfield passing game against Denver 2 weeks ago. Then this past week, he had one to Zay Jones on what really should have been a fourth down. Interestingly enough, the Eagles made a decision to accept the penalty and give the Raiders another third down opportunity. And then they hit him with an out and up with Zay Jones on a out and up route along the right side of the field, which was a brilliant throw.
Mm-hmm.
He's throwing with timing and rhythm and anticipation. He had a great throw to Hunter Renfrow on a backside post route. I've been very impressed with Carr. And I think the strides he's made as a passer in the downfield passing game, he's really opened up the playbooks for the Raiders the past couple of seasons. I think it's made them a very competitive team. And, you can't really knock the results to this point. I think they're certainly in the mix in the AFC West. So I'm very impressed with the Carr.
Well, and it also shows you that there can be progression with quarterbacks, right? And before the season began, the same texter, Sylvan Black Canuck, we kind of talked about Baker Mayfield versus Derek Carr. And I was like, I'd rather have Mayfield over Carr. But right now, I'd rather have Derek Carr than Baker Mayfield based on how he's played. And this kind of brings me to Tua in a moment. So just bear with me for a second here, Mark. Would it be a ridiculous move if the Browns were to trade for Tua with a mid-round pick and have him maybe battle with Baker Mayfield next season for the job. Could you see that maybe working with that system?
I mean, that's a real sort of outside the box line of thinking, Chad. But, you know, there could be something to that. I mean, what's interesting in the whole Tua discussion right now, we don't even have a full season of games on him yet. Hmm. And I think if you look at him the past couple of weeks, since he's come back from the injury, he's had some decisions, some throws, some reads, some moments where you can say, okay, I can see it. I'm not ready to give up on him yet. And so I know, obviously, the Deshaun Watson rumors are swirling again, and we've got the trade deadline come up, and every time Deshaun Watson's name's come up, you know, it's the Miami Dolphins or the team that they're linked with. I still think if you're Miami, you see what you have in Tua. I don't think you can say definitively right now he's not the answer, number one. And number two, I don't think you can look at this roster at this point, you know, almost midway through the season and think Deshaun Watson is the answer to where your struggles are. I think there are issues beyond just the quarterback position that bringing in a new quarterback won't fix. So if I'm Miami, I'm not moving Tua. If I'm Cleveland, I know in recent weeks there's been some sort of trepidation about the long-term, you know, position of Baker Mayfield as the Cleveland Browns quarterback going forward. And I know there are decisions to be made. I know you've seen some numbers floated about what Cleveland's rumored to be willing to pay Baker. You know, I can understand why people might not want to do that, perhaps bring in some competition. But to bring in a young quarterback like Tua, I'm not so sure that's the answer. I think Cleveland, if they do decide to extend Baker, even if it's not, you know, the top dollar type of contract, that they'd probably look more sort of the veteran route. You know, maybe you look at what Case Keenum did on Thursday night, maybe it's like, well, he's at least that backstop that if it really goes south, we have somebody we can turn to, that we might have to reset things in the quarterback market. I'm not so sure that going out and trading for a Tua while you're still potentially holding on to Baker Mayfield and hoping that he pans out is really the message that you want to send.
The statement win of the weekend was the Bengals over the Ravens. And, you know, Joe Burrow continues to impress, especially when you compare it to early on in the year, the first couple of weeks where maybe there was some concern about, you know, the struggle to avoid pressure. Now, all of a sudden, he's turning those potential sacks that would have been maybe sacks earlier on in the year, and he's making plays. Is that the most impressive part of the game for you when it comes to Joe Burrow's, like, progression over the first 7 weeks of the season?
I think so. I think that combined with the freedom to make decisions at the line of scrimmage, you know, checks, audibles, getting into plays, getting out of plays, the freedom to do that regardless of situation, you know, the fourth down call in overtime, the zero blitz screen against the Jags in a tough situation late in the game on that Thursday night, or some of the checks he made, and the protection adjustments that he's making at the line of scrimmage. They were doing some stuff against Baltimore, some of the pressure looks they were getting from the Ravens. You saw, you know, Joe Burrow's freedom at the line of scrimmage to adjust protections, to set protections, which is critical for a young quarterback. You love to see young quarterbacks do that. That's one thing I'm very impressed with. But you're right. Look, we sometimes see this with quarterbacks when they come back from that lower body injury, when they come back from an injury like this. They're not yet confident and comfortable with that lower body in terms of pocket movement, in terms of throwing mechanics, and it takes some time for them to feel comfortable again. Burrow's now comfortable in that lower body. He knows if he's got edge pressure, he can click and climb in the pocket. He can sort of take a step back, try to get that guy to adjust his line of attack, his angle on him, and then step around him like he did on one play to convert a third down, steps around the free rusher, checks it down for a catch and run situation that turns a third down into a first down. Now that he's comfortable in that lower body again, he's moving around the pocket a little bit more. He's got the ability to make free rushers miss. You know, and sometimes as a quarterback, you have to do that. You might, as Burrow does, adjust the protection, bring in five, you know, bring in the tight end. So now you've got six in protection, get the back involved. Now you've got seven in protection. They're showing a six-man pressure. You might think everything's blocked up. Well, maybe they stunt, maybe they blitz, maybe they twist, and suddenly you've got a free rusher on you, and you're going to make that guy miss. Early in the season, he wasn't able to do that, perhaps because of the knee. Now he's comfortable in that knee, so we can make that extra guy miss. And when you have that ability, you can make some big plays in the passing game. As a result, burn the defense for bringing that pressure. Look, that's what Burrow is doing really well right now. Those two things, though, the pocket movement as well as what he does at the line of scrimmage, those are the two impressive things to me with him.
Mark Schofield, our guest, joins us weekly on The People's Show. QB analyst, Touchdown Wire, USA Today. Two very impressive wins for the Tennessee Titans over the last couple of weeks. One over the Bills, one over the Kansas City Chiefs. And this past week, Mark, you know, Ryan Tannehill really tore apart the Chiefs defense, which maybe isn't that hard these days. But you know, I was really impressed with what we saw from the Titans offense in the past game. And I wonder if it comes all down to getting A.J. Brown and Julio Jones back and healthy.
I mean, I certainly think that helps. You saw the connection between Tannehill and Brown, whether it was in the vertical passing game on go routes, whether it was obviously we know where the Titans like to be, the play-action pass game, and we can get those crosser routes. Brown is so good working over the middle. He's fearless when he's, you know, crossing that middle of the field, not afraid to take a hit. But when you, as an offense, you can put Derrick Henry in the backfield and you can show run looks and then you throw off the same look. If you think back a couple of weeks, Brandon Staley, everybody's loving Brandon Staley right now with good reason. And he talked about how you don't need to be a good running team. You don't have to be overly effective running the football to be successful on play action. What you need is to have the looks be the same. So those linebackers are convinced, oh, I've seen this before. This is run action. They start downhill. It creates the space behind them to throw those crossing routes. Well, when you combine Derrick Henry with how well the Titans show run looks and then throw off that same look, that's tough for a defense to handle. And then that's what we're seeing with the Titans right now. So you have Brown, you have Julio Jones, you obviously have the fear of Derrick Henry and what that does to a defense. And what does that do? It creates a lot of single high coverage because defensive coordinators want to bring that extra safety down in the box. You watch that game against the Chiefs this past Sunday. There were a lot of 7-8 man boxes that the Chiefs were showing the Titans. They were saying, look, we're so worried about Derrick Henry and stopping what he can do. We're going to give you single coverage on the outside, man coverage on the outside. We're going to give you that single high safety look. And that's when Tannehill is throwing deep shots to A.J. Brown. And, you know, it opens up a lot, the fear of Derrick Henry and how well the Titans construct their play-action passing game to mimic and mirror what their run game looks like. That makes them a very dangerous offense.
Mark Schofield is our guest, Touchdown Wire USA Today here on Sportsnet 650. And Mark, you know, the Titans played the Chiefs. You mentioned the Chiefs. And last week we talked about Patrick Mahomes and how we're not really worried about that offense. But not to say I'm worried about Patrick Mahomes, because, hey, he's going to be fine, so will the Chiefs over the long term. But that's the first time I really noticed him seeing ghosts in a game. Like, what did you make of that performance and how out of sorts he was with the pressure he was facing? And that accuracy we know wasn't really there on the weekend.
Yeah, and, you know, I still think long term, like you said, they're going to be fine. That offense is going to be okay, but they're struggling right now. And, you know, similar to the discussion we were just having with Tua, not to make a Tua to Patrick Mahomes comparison, but there are issues in Kansas City that go beyond the quarterback position. It starts on the defensive side of the ball. And that's a defense that right now, over the course of the season, has allowed opposing passers an adjusted net yards per attempt of 8.2, which would be fifth in the NFL right now, behind Kyler Murray and ahead of Tom Brady. So they're basically turning opposing passers into an MVP candidate week in and week out. That's how bad this defense has been. And as a result, Mahomes goes out there, and he thinks he has to basically hit home runs every drive. They have to finish every drive with seven. So in a 3rd-and-8 situation, when he's pressured or he feels pressure, he feels like he still has to make a throw. He can't throw it away and live for the next drive because they might be down 14-0 when he gets the ball back. They might be down 21-0 when he gets the ball back. So he's forcing throws as a result. So that, you know, there's this cascading effect to it. But particularly with Mahomes and the ghost in the pocket, you are seeing now there are a number of plays against Tennessee where he hits that final step of his draw and he's got pressure on him. So then later in the drive or later in the game, he hits that final step of his drop and he starts to move. He starts to bail. He starts to climb the pocket because he just thinks that pressure is going to get there. You typically see that with quarterbacks that have been pressured, that have been harassed, that have been hit. They feel like they have to speed everything up. Dan Orlovsky this week did a great video on Sam Darnold and how he's cutting some drops short because he feels pressure and he has to feel like he speeds things up. Well, when you cut a five-step drop into a three-step drop, you're ready to throw. None of the routes are looking at you. None of the routes are ready to be thrown to. And that throws the timing of plays off. And so, again, it's this cascading effect, right? Mahomes feels like he's getting pressured. He feels like he has to speed things up or bail and try to create. And while he's running himself out of situations, he's running himself out of concepts, timing gets thrown off. And then you add to that the fact he feels like he has to throw in situations where maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, he just throw it away because he thinks, well, our defense can get a stop. Right now he doesn't have that. So he's forcing throws. You're getting turnovers. It's a big ball of problems right now. I think long-term they'll get it figured out, but it might take a little bit of time. Unfortunately, time is running out.
The Falcons might not be having that team success. They're 500 as of right now, but you know, in the last 3 weeks, we've seen Matt Ryan kind of elevate his play. Part of that has to do with Kyle Pitts and the athletic freak that he has. He's really starting to, you know, come together as a player. But you know, what is this year's Matt Ryan showing us? I feel like we were ready to kind of say, "All right, sail into the sunset or ride off into the sunset. You're done." But is he kind of changing that story, especially with the last 3 weeks and what we've seen from him?
I think so, guys. I think he's changed it a bit. I think, you know, when you're picking fourth in the draft and there's a draft class where you expect five guys to go in the first round and you have a quarterback at the end of his career, a lot of people said it's an opportunity to draft the next quarterback. Maybe it's a Trey Lance. You know, maybe it's a Justin Fields and you have an opportunity to let them sort of sit and learn behind Matt Ryan. You want us to play them right away. But what we've seen from Matt Ryan, and really, you know, go back to their game against the Giants a couple weeks ago, you know, what we've seen the past couple of weeks, you know, the arm might not be what it once was. You know, the velocity has dipped a little bit, but the placement is still at a very high level. You look at, you know, you can look at certainly the vertical throws that he had to Kyle Pitts this week, who has really come on. And look, when you see the Dolphins take Xavier Howard and put him in man coverage over Kyle Pitts late in the game, and Pitts still makes the play, that's one of those turning point moments in the league where other defensive coordinators are going to start doing the same, and you start creating mismatches for other players. I'd expect Calvin Ridley to start getting some favorable situations as a result, so you can see how this goes forward for the Atlanta Falcons. But specific to Ryan, the ball placement, not just the vertical passing game, but some of those crossing routes, those quick post routes where you've got defenders lurking in the middle of the field and you've got to throw to put your guy in a position to make a catch and secure and still make a move. You've got to perhaps throw to a back shoulder or a back hip to protect your receiver going across the middle. He's still putting those throws exactly where they need to be. So, yeah, the velocity might have dipped a little bit, but the ball placement has been elite the past couple of weeks. And that's really what's allowed Ryan and this Atlanta offense to have some success, obviously coupled with the emergence of Kyle Pitts.
Mark Schofield, our guest. All right, it's time for the throw of the week. Where are we looking?
We're going to Arizona, guys. Kyler Murray, that 3rd-and-24 conversion where Houston's in this two-deep zone and he has A.J. Green on a go route along the right sideline. You know, we all talk about the cover two hole shot, right? That deep area along the outside where, you know, it's behind the corner, it's away from the safety. But he threw this like 50 yards almost on a rope right along the sideline. It gets there right before the safety arrives. Green's able to catch, toe tap, and get out of bounds. He basically, and I said this earlier this week, he redefines the term hole shot with that throw. Mm-hmm. I mean, he and Justin Herbert have had a couple of those this year that are just out of this world. But Murray gets the throw of the week this week.
And Mark, before we let you go, we got to look forward to the top quarterback matchup in week 8 of the NFL. And any other year, we looked at, say, last year we looked at the Bucks and the Saints. We'd say, yeah, Tom Brady versus Drew Brees, that's not happening. So which matchup are you most intrigued by this upcoming week?
I mean, there are two that really stick out. I mean, Thursday night we get the aforementioned Kyler Murray and we get Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I know both teams are going to be missing some players, potentially J.J. Watt now out. But still, those are two quarterbacks that are must-watch for me. And then the Sunday night game, look, Dak Prescott should be cleared to go. He was practicing today. And a guy that keeps sliding under the radar, we barely talk about him, but he's playing well, is Kirk Cousins. And I know Cousins is kind of an up-and-down quarterback at times, but he's played really well this season. So that will be a very fun quarterback matchup to watch on a Sunday night, provided Prescott goes. Dak versus Kirk, that could be a very fun game.
Mark, we appreciate the time as always, man. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks so much. Have a great week.
There he is, Mark Schofield on The People's Show. Glad to have him as a part of The People's Show every single week. Kyler Murray, Aaron Rodgers, Thursday night football. Kind of excited for this one, even if, as Mark mentioned, you know, Devontae Adams and some others are going to be missing. Still get the quarterback matchup.
And which quarterback can make the plays, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, Aaron Rodgers is one of the greatest passers of all time, and we've seen him still cobble together good games without Devontae Adams or great weapons around him. And it's going to be one of those games, right? Which quarterback has the extra special in their back pocket that evening?
Yeah, Alan Lazard is another person that's now on the protocol list as well. So, but we know this about Aaron Rodgers. He's going to make people you've never heard of before in your life, you know, a practice roster wide receiver relevant. That's what he does. He's done it in the past. So if they call up somebody, guess what? You might want to, you know, anytime touchdown bets for some of those guys lower down the pecking order, I'd take a gamble on it just because he's going to make somebody relevant.
Yeah, Randall Cobb, who had a couple bad drops this season and this week, he wasn't great. But there's familiarity there with
best buds.
You know, best buds, right?
Essentially brought him back because he's buds with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, and I don't know if he's going to have, like, he's going to help them win, but fantasy-wise, he might get, like, 15 targets.
I'm firing up Robert Tonyan this week. That's for sure. He started to get his groove going last week. And the Packers, you know, I'm interested because the Packers' defense, you know, hasn't been terrible. They've gone through some injuries, but their matchups haven't really been all that difficult recently, right? They had Washington. They had the Bengals. A few weeks ago, they did all right against the Bengals. It was a pretty good offense. You see them continuing to develop. The Bears they had. You know, so that's, I think, the big test for the Thursday nighter is Rodgers and, of course, the Green Bay defense against Kyler Murray.
Okay, you guys mentioned fantasy. We do have something special to announce as well.
Oh, yep.
The People Show Fantasy League. We have something finally.
Finally.
We've been talking about a watch party.
Finally! I feel like The Rock all
We've been talking about a watch party at some point this year. We do have something set up. We're happy to be partnering with Milltown Bar and Grill, my local bar.
Ooh.
It's just along Marine Drive. It's technically in Richmond. 9191 Bentley in Richmond will be on Sunday, January 2nd for the Sunday Nighter. Packers versus Vikings. That's going to be the culmination of the fantasy football season. So anybody in the league is welcome, but so is anybody else from the People Show community. So, you know, we'll remind you as we get closer to the date, but we do have a watch party when everybody from the People Show can get together and celebrate a winner. Whoever that's going to be in our league, it sure as hell won't be me. I can tell you that much.
We'll have some New Year's drinks and watch some football. Enjoy the company of the citizens of the People Show. Those that are in the Fantasy League can be there, but everybody can be there at the Milltown Pub.
Yeah, Milltown Bar and Grill, happy to be partnering with them and, you know, looking forward to spending some Sundays there. So happy to have them on board.
Yeah, it is fantastic. Super excited about it. It's long overdue, and we're working on more things to get out there. We were at the sports bar. We'll see. We'll have other things like this coming up. But it's a lot of fun hanging out with the people.
Yep.
So we really want to do a lot more of that as the season goes on.
People helping people.
Yep.
We like that. It is the People's Show. All right. Coming up, The Wire. Get back in on the Vancouver Canucks and some stories around the National Hockey League next. It is the People's Show, Sports at 650. We really getting Mariah Carey going over here?
Okay, low key.
I like it.
This was a fire album back in the day.
This is a banger, man.
My sister used to play this around the house when we were younger.
Oh, yeah.
Mariah Carey, she's got some skills, man. This was a fire album back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Mariah Carey still comes on. I got to finish watching. I even, like, spent 10 minutes watching a Christmas special last night. It's Mariah.
I'm admitting my love for the
I can do this.
Red Hot Chili Peppers and Mariah Carey on today's show. What is going on, guys?
I don't know.
Listen, I'm mostly a hip-hop guy. Like, that's my bread-and-butter wheelhouse, but I love rock. I love all kinds of music, really. The only music I'm not really into is country. And even country, I mean, I'll like some jams. Like
country.
I'm a big fan of Johnny Cash back in the day and stuff like that.
But country today isn't really country anymore. It's like pop.
I like one country song. Red Solo Cup by Toby Keith.
Yeah.
If you've been at a garage party in some Southeast Vancouver,
yes.
It doesn't matter if you're in Tennessee, Alabama,
yeah.
Or a Southeast Vancouver alley party.
I mean,
Red Solo Cup just hits. It hits different.
Nah. Kenny Chesney's got some bangers, you know. No shoes, no shirt, no problems. That one's pretty good. She thinks my tractor's sexy. It's always a fun one.
It's a very Punjabi song from like the old country, yeah.
Mike
good
G.
Old John Deere.
Mike G, shake my head. What's happened to the People's Show?
Okay.
Why?
Reach has been branding me as the hip hop guy, like I don't listen to anything else. I do listen to other things. I just like hip hop better than anything else.
Yeah, same. I mean, but again, like I you know, I spent some time in classic rock radio working back in the day, so I've been exposed to that. I've worked with alternative rock, and I like alternative rock. Like, I'm, you know, like, for instance,
you've never seen Sat Rock out to the Eagles.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking.
You know what I find weird? Like, because I don't listen to a lot of FM radio, obviously, but like a classic rock radio station, do they just play like 90s rock now, or is it still like 70s and 80s rock?
I think we're entered the stage where like Nirvana is considered classic rock.
Okay.
I mean, it's 30 years ago.
Yeah. It's true.
Right?
Like, it's kind of tough for me to
come
to terms.
Can you believe that? They've been around longer than Faber's been around. That was how long ago it was. And Faber probably likes Nirvana as well.
You know what gets me? When you have like a throwback Thursday and then like anything from 50 Cent's Get Rich or Die Tryin' comes on, or Country Grammar, I'm just like, man, I can't believe this is old school now. Just yesterday it was new school.
We're having old man moments nowadays.
And Reach is getting called out for his ear hair.
One word Dan should never say again. Banger.
What'd the kids say? What was your line yesterday? As the kids say.
As the kids say.
It's lit.
Lit. I hear it's lit. Crypto Cow, J-Lo for Randeep, Mariah Fassat. No, not so much. I'm just, you know,
so
just saying.
So was the intro video lit or not?
Bunk or junk? I mean, dunk or, what is it? No, dunk or bunk?
Dunk or bunk on the Heroes video.
Okay.
Heroes Return. Is that what they called it? Is that what they coined it? I like some of the behind-the-scenes stuff they actually posted today.
Okay, I'm not a Marvel guy. I'm not. That's not my genre. I'm very
just Marvel.
But like that genre,
everything.
Right? Like, you know that Marty Scorsese quote about they're not classic movies, whatever it is.
Yes.
I'm kind of old school that way.
But he did Batman, so.
Yeah, so maybe he's a hypocrite.
He worked on Batman.
Maybe he's a bit of a hypocrite.
Yeah.
But
everybody's
it's not really my jam, but I can appreciate it. But there was so much hype going into this.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was cool. I thought it for the fans, for the players, it was cool. So was it worth the hype? Probably not, but it was still cool, right?
I mean, here's the thing. Apparently, that's a big production. Like, I don't know.
Seemed like it.
It
yeah,
was.
I'm not going to lie.
It was a big production, and I heard it wasn't necessarily a cheap thing to put together. So, I was actually impressed by how big it was. I thought, okay, maybe a couple minutes. Like, there's like 5 minute little short film, essentially, is what they made out
of it. It's great content, though, for the memes alone. Oh,
it's great.
Great.
Now, is it a little cheesy at times? Well, that's the point. I mean, it's going to be cheesy when you're making hockey players into superheroes, right? And the city's burning. It's going to be a little cheesy. But it was well done. Like, I think it was fun. It's a big hit with the younger crowd in the audience, and I think we all kind of got something out of it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, no, and especially, I think, as, you know, people that are a little bit older, we think of, imagine being a kid in that arena, watching that on the Jumbotron. It's kind of how you feel like it when you're a kid. You know, those pro athletes are superheroes in your mind. So just having that from a different perspective, I'm all for it. It was not necessarily my jam because I'm not into that sort of stuff, I guess, the superhero element. But imagine being a kid, seeing Bo Horvat and Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser in those roles. Pretty cool, man. I wish, like, looking back at a young Dan or a young Sat or a young Randeep, imagine Pavel Bure occupying that sort of role in a video. We'd all be like, yeah, I'm for this.
Everybody had a thought on it, and we all had some fun with it. Before we get to the wire, I want to introduce our wrong answers only for today.
Okay. Just before you do that, quickly, next year's hype video, Garland as Angry Yoda. That's unsigned text. That's good. That's really good.
That's good.
I could see that. What was he supposed to be? Like Sonic the Hedgehog? Is that
Flash?
What
Flash? Was he like Flash?
Was
he running
Flash?
Really fast, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. I was sitting next to you when we were watching the Breach, and I said, yeah, like, what's his nickname? Sonic after that. He's just running fast on a treadmill.
Yeah, I thought I was the only hedgehog in town. I'm kind of upset now.
Yeah.
I think he stole your brand. Your other brand.
Yes.
All right. Wrong answers only. Who is the supervillain in the Canucks hype video?
Oh, that's good.
Everybody had their fun with the video, but who's the supervillain in the Canucks hype video? Wrong answers only here on the People's Show.
The salary cap?
No, you did it. Sat's just going right for the jugular.
No, I mean, we all know the jugular would be. And there'll be a lot of those coming in, too.
Oh, yeah.
Sat just went with the chop to the neck, like right in the Adam's apple.
The salary cap is the Canucks.
Boom.
The salary cap is the Canucks Kaiser Soze.
Yeah.
It's there. Do we really know if it's there? Is it a problem? Yes. You know, it's debated in Canucks land over and over.
Francesco just walking down the hallways with a limp and all of a sudden it gets better. Reveals himself as a real villain.
That's the promo we want to see next year.
Wrong answers only. Who is the supervillain in the Canucks hype video? Darren. Leafs. LOL.
Okay. I got one. Gary Bettman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? Gary Bettman's the obvious one.
Big cap recapture penalty coming your way.
Just all the conspiracy theories. Marcus and Gibson's coming in with wrong answers only. The supervillain is a 60-minute performance.
Yeah. Scoring chances.
Yeah. How many times are we going to hear it this year after a game? One of the players or Travis. We just didn't put it together for 60 minutes.
Yeah. We'll hear it a few times.
Isn't that like the greatest fallacy in hockey that you could put it together for 60 minutes?
Who plays a full 60 minutes perfectly?
It's even like, the reigning two-time cup champions don't have 60-minute games. Let's be honest. Tampa doesn't play a perfect game.
Like in basketball, it's like, you know, widely just accepted. There's going to be runs during a game where you kind of go through it a little bit. Why isn't that accepted in hockey? Like, why isn't it okay to have, like, a bad three-minute stretch in a hockey game? Why does it have to be we've got to play for 60 minutes the whole time? Can never let our guard down. Like, it's just, it's not realistic to think a team's going to do that.
But it's just cliches, right? I mean, yes. You just hear so many. The hockey cliches are the best and the worst.
Sorry, I didn't mean to have a Seinfeld moment.
No, it's okay. It's okay. You know me. I'm all for the rant.
We got this one. The wrong answers only. The People Show. Oh. Us as the villain. Really?
That's good. This one, unsigned, tag team villain duo of Halford and Bruff, House of Negativity.
That's true.
This one, unsigned, the first period.
I love these answers.
Why are the Canucks so bad in the first period?
Man, brutal.
Can anybody figure it out?
I love the answers that make sense, but the ones that don't. Like Stan from the Slur, Luna Vachon.
Like what?
Sure, we'll allow it. It's a wrong answer. It's a wrong answer.
I mean, she was from Montreal.
Yeah, Luna Vachon. Did not expect a Luna Vachon reference.
I didn't either. And Miss Elizabeth references. We got Victor coming in with Marchand as the supervillain.
Mm. Is he licking anybody?
He will be returning to Vancouver after a couple years, so that could play out still.
How do you... All right. Brad Marchand as the villain. What about John Madden? Heading to the Roxy in his limo.
I think that was post-Roxy picture, if I'm not mistaken. It's how usually, you know, not everybody leaves the Roxy that way, but I think you've partied when you look like that.
Yeah, you do. I like this one. Unsigned. The Stanley Cup.
Okay.
They never get there, man. That's the text.
This one. Gary Bettman as the Danny DeVito-style penguin villain from Batman. So just dressed like penguin from
That's
Batman.
Pretty savage.
Jonathan in Vancouver, the fans.
I got another write-in, because why not?
Okay.
Stéphane Auger.
Oh, yeah.
Still a villain in Vancouver.
Stéphane Auger. All right. Wrong answers only. We'll get back to more of these coming up in a little bit. Also, shouts to the fans that were chanting Tyler Myers' name for a brief moment during last night's game.
I'm telling you, the fans did everything they could to get involved in that game. They were just looking for anything. It's like, you know, a dump, like basically OEL not icing the puck created a roar, right? And, you know, Myers being able to skate the puck out created a roar. I mean, the fans really, I saw people texting in again and be like, hey, was it just me or were the fans really dead on TV? Man, we were there.
Yeah.
And they tried. The fans really tried to do their best to get the vibe going in that arena last night.
Yeah, if Brock Besser scores that goal,
that
building is jumping. Bumping. Right? It would have been jumping. But I think the fans are ready. The team was not necessarily there.
Like on the list of things you didn't expect to hear at Rogers Arena, Tyler Myers chant, like it was probably pretty high, like a positive one, because he's just been the whipping boy for the franchise ever since signing his contract here. But Myers is backing it up with his play right now. So shouts to Tyler Myers.
You know what really would have surprised me, though? A Jim Benning chant.
Oh.
Like, Jimbo, Jimbo, Jimbo. Yeah. That would have shocked me. That's the only thing that could have shocked me more.
A good one?
Yes. A positive one.
I mean. Yeah.
Not a banner raising one.
No.
All right.
I'd say the only if there's ever a chant for Jim, it wouldn't be in support of Jim. Usually fans don't chant in support of general managers at arenas. That's usually not what happens.
All
Mike
right.
Gillis can tell you that. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Let's do the wire. A couple of stories from around the NHL that are pertinent right now. Faber, hit the music. We have a bunch of things going on. Some injuries, some returns, a lot. We mentioned it earlier, Drew Doughty, out at least 8 weeks with a knee contusion after a collision with Yanni Hakanpää. Now, the LA Kings are off to a tough start to begin with. Drew Doughty was off to a great start before this injury. I'm not so much worried about them. I'm curious how this affects Team Canada. He was, look, depending on who you ask, he was either on the team, on the fringe of the team, or doesn't deserve to be on it with the way that his career has gone. I think anybody being realistic about the situation, whether you think he's good enough for Team Canada anymore at this stage of his career, he's in the conversation for those that are picking the team. Does this take him out of the running for Team Canada?
So the easy answer would be yes.
Yeah.
But 8 weeks, he can still be back in time. And how many veterans will they go with in this tournament?
Yeah.
That's kind of a question I have, too, because you haven't seen a lot of situations where these guys have been able to play together, right? There's been no international tournaments for these guys the last couple of years and stuff like that. So I wonder, as much as, yeah, in theory, it should be, I don't know. I think he might have enough time to come back, and it wouldn't surprise me if Canada does lean on a more veteran-laden roster this time around at the Olympics.
Yeah, in this case, if you look at even the extra defenseman, remember the PK Subban rule, right, where if you know what you have in a player and if the recovery is going on time and you may be doubting of whether the player is ready, you just name him just in case, where you're saying, okay, we know what he brings, and if he's good to go, this is at the very least an extra defenseman you can slot in there. If his game's ready to go,
does Doughty get that kind of benefit of the doubt anymore?
I think he does, man. Come on. Look at his last two seasons. He's played great. He played on a garbage team.
Okay. Alex Pietrangelo's already on the team. So there's one right shot.
Kale McCarr.
Is he a lock?
Yeah, of course.
He's a lock. Right? Kale McCarr's a lock.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you're looking at two more right shot D-men then. Colton Parayko. Dougie Hamilton. Aaron Ekblad, Jared Spurgeon. How far down the list do we want to go? I mean, like, that's a pretty stacked list. If Aaron Ekblad's having a great season, you're going to not take him? Dougie Hamilton has another Norris caliber season. You're not taking him?
I think with a lot of those guys, and Dougie Hamilton is number one on my list because he does get a lot of disrespect around the league because, you know, but there's a reason he's making all that money. There's a reason that New Jersey goes after him. I'd include him on the list, but when we're talking about extras, Drew Doughty, been there, done that. That matters. So if he's an extra, remember, I think there's a lot of value there where you're saying he's one of the leaders on that group, and if he's able to play, you're including him on that list. Even if he's not starting on a pairing, Dan, I think Drew Doughty still makes sense there. No disrespect to Aaron Ekblad and Spurgeon and all those guys. If Doughty's good to go, got to name him on that team, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, I mean, a guy like Dougie Hamilton to me has to be a lock. So all of a sudden, yeah, Pietrangelo and Dougie.
Yeah.
That should be a lock on your right side, right? And then, you know, between Aaron Ekblad, Ryan Ellis, I think should be in that mix, Kale McCarr. I think you can keep Doughty off the team, but like Randy mentioned, it wouldn't surprise me that Team Canada does bring a bunch of these veterans in, have guys that have been at some of these tournaments together in the past. Like it just kind of seems, and I wonder if that happens and they kind of fall flat, we'll have a big topic for criticism.
The president of the Eric Goodbranson fan club, Bobby from Richmond, is saying Goody is a right-hand shot. Thanks for that, Bobby.
Yes, he's a defenseman that plays the right side.
Unless he's if he's representing Italy or Ireland, maybe he's on the Olympic roster if they make it.
I mean, he could play for, Italy for sure.
Denmark. Does he want to become a Danish citizen?
Yeah, maybe not. But maybe, who knows? If they pay you enough. Yeah.
Eric Goodbranson, off to a good start this season. 3 assists in 6 games with the Calgary Flames.
Hey, Bobby can't criticize us for bringing that up. He brought it up himself.
Yeah.
So that is the story around Drew Doughty. I think he's not on the team given the injury, but I'm probably wrong on that. I understand he's going to get some extra love for everything he has done with Team Canada in the past.
He's also played pretty well the last 2 years.
Yep. But others have played better. Honestly, if they take Drew Doughty over Dougie Hamilton, does that make sense to anybody?
No.
Thank you.
If he's healthy, yeah, but if you're saying Ekblad, who was injured for all of last year, that makes sense to me.
Okay. Sidney Crosby is nearing a return with the Pittsburgh Penguins. As we've talked about and seen, Pens are playing pretty well, even without Sid and Gino. Did we undersell what the Penguins could be this year, or do we undersell Mike Sullivan as the best coach in the National Hockey League?
When we see those omissions, guys, it's easy, and I made this mistake, right, in the preseason looking at it and saying, okay, Evan Rodriguez and Teddy Bluger, that's a hell of a drop-off. But what did we undersell? And I think the NHL has undersold him as well. Mike Sullivan, man, this guy's never won a Jack Adams. And sometimes what we do is we look at that star and talent and say, oh, yeah, that team's driven by those two players. Mike Sullivan and what he's brought to that organization when he came in after Mike Johnston was fired, they're, you know, getting those players up and ready for games. Like, they smacked around Toronto on Saturday with Evan Rodriguez playing first-line center. That goes to good coaching. And Mike Sullivan is among the best, if not a top two or three coach in the NHL. I think we sometimes disrespect him because we see those two big stars at the top of the lineup.
He gets his message through, you're right, right? He gets guys engaged. But here's the thing. You keep those guys out of your roster for longer than this. If Sidney Crosby misses 25 games, you know, you can live, you can get by for 10 games or so, maybe a little bit more. You coach everybody up. At some point, that comes out. But you're right. What he's able to do is get those guys for at least a short term to bind together and play, you know, greater than the sum of their parts, really. And that's a big credit to his coaching. But, you know, you can't be having Evan Rodriguez on your first line for, say, 40 games and get away with it.
Yeah, there's an expiration date on Evan Rodriguez playing first line minutes, right?
I wanted to get to a couple of more things. Kucherov's out 8 to 10 weeks. I think the Lightning will be fine, as we've seen, even if it is in the ultra-competitive Atlantic Division. Flames are off to a hot start, winners of four in a row. Mangiapane and Lindholm have 7 goals apiece, pretty impressive. We'll see if that continues. Ovi's up to 8 goals on the year, scored against Detroit tonight. Jason Robertson making his season debut with Dallas. Was a Calder finalist last year, is maybe the most least talked about Robertson around the league after all we hear about Nick Robertson in Toronto, who didn't even make the club out of camp this year. Is Jason Robertson the most under-the-radar young star in the show right now?
He very well might be. I mean, he put up 45 points last year in a shortened season, finished second in the Calder voting behind Kirill Kaprizov, who was, what, a 24-year-old rookie last year, 23-year-old rookie, whatever it was last year, with some experience. Robertson was terrific, and the speed he plays with, the skill he has, and the toughness he also brings, there's a lot to like about Robertson, but nobody ever talks about him. Like, I was kind of surprised. I looked at him like, oh, Robertson's playing. I never hear anybody talk about Jason Robertson. Yeah. And I think he's a guy, you know how like Roope Hintz a couple years ago kind of came onto the scene with the Dallas Stars?
Yeah.
It should have been last year for Robertson, but the Stars missed the playoffs. He's a guy that if the Stars put it together, you're going to be talking and hearing about him a lot. And if he's free in any of your fantasy leagues for whatever reason, snap him up.
Yeah, I think it's two-pronged, right? Last year, the North Division, we focused almost entirely on that. The 45-point season that he had flew under the radar because, let's be honest, how many people were focusing on Dallas Stars game? Not many. And Canadian hockey fans weren't doing that. As much as we'd like to say as media, we were watching every single game. You know, there was primarily a focus on the North Division during the regular season. The other thing is Dallas isn't the most attractive hockey to watch, right? So therefore, less eyeballs on that system. I don't think that system gets respect. But if you put 45 points up in 51 games playing in that system, that tells you something. That tells you you're a very high-end talent. So this year, as the Dallas Stars start traveling to the northern markets again, you're right. We're going to hear that name a lot more this year because we know Toronto, you know, they love one Robertson. But this year, they're going to be able to see, you know, Jason a lot more. And you're going to get a lot more coverage as well. And Kaprizov, hey, man, there was the Artemi Panarin. He ended up getting that love because he was doing special things, put up, you know, a lot of points. But Robertson, I think it also goes back to playing in Dallas, which is a bit of a hinterland when it comes to star talent.
I would throw Jordan Kyrou's name in there as well as one of the more under-the-radar young players in the league that is really showing out. I think he's around a point per game or a little bit above it right now and doesn't get a ton of ice time in St. Louis either. Kyrou is really on the brink of a breakout season with the St. Louis Blues and a big reason why they're still undefeated right now. You can send in your thoughts, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Also, do this with your chance to win a pair of lower bowl seats to the Canucks and Flyers tomorrow night at Rogers Arena. Sat, you've got our trivia question for today. What is it?
Claude Giroux, another player who might feature at the Olympics, or at least would have had a chance at some point. He was drafted in Vancouver in 2006, 22nd overall. Who did the Canucks draft that year? 14th overall.
All right. 2006, first round pick by the Canucks, 14th overall. The same year, Claude Giroux was drafted as the Flyers come to town tomorrow night. Get in your answers, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Every correct answer goes into the randomizer, and you just might win a pair of lower bowl seats to Canucks and Flyers tomorrow night. Coming up next, Dan Rosen on The People's Show, Sports at 650.